page 430. Had they analyzed the concept of practice itself, it would have been evident that this is by no means as clear in symbol as it seems in pragmatism, where it reduces and impoverishes truth. The meaning of the criterion is indeed not developed in experiments in natural science. Its essence consists in neatly isolating assertion, object, and verification. The undefined and questionable aspect of the situation lies in the unarticulated relationship between the specific scientific activity and the life of the individuals involved and people in general. In the ostensibly natural and self-evident character of the theoretical act, the unresolved and problematical aspects of its relationship to the concrete historical life with which it is obviously interwoven appears as soon as one more closely investigates the controlling categories and the choice of objects and methods. Practice as verification itself leads to a critique of positivists' philosophies, hypostatization of natural science and its basic concepts. The help of metaphysics is not required. However, much the problem of natural science are solvable within its boundaries and with its specific means, independent of anything else. Technical knowledge is in itself abstract and acquires its full truth only in the theory, which comprehends natural science in this particular historical situation as an aspect of society's development as a whole. If, in addition, practice is understood as the criterion not merely in the special case of physical science and the technique based on it, but in the theory of history, then it becomes clear without further ado that it embraces the whole situation of society at any given moment. It takes more than attention to isolated events or groups of events, or reference to general concepts such as that of progress to apply the criterion of practice in deciding such questions as whether one or another judgment of the contemporary authoritarian states is correct, whether they can develop only in politically backward countries with strong remnants of a landed aristocracy, or whether they should be regarded as an adequate state form for the present economic phase, hence necessarily to be expected in other eras. Whether this or that theory of colonial expansion applies, whether, to come to more abstract problems, the progressive technical sealing off and mathematization of logic in economics is more suited to their present situation than sticking to the development of concepts reflecting the historical situation. For this, one needs a definite theory of society as a whole, which is itself only to be thought of in terms of particular interests and tasks with one's own point of view and activity. Page 431. Schaller does not pursue this conceptual movement in which it becomes clear that practice as an abstract criterion of truth changes into the concrete theory of society and strips off the formalism in which it is clad in the undialectical thought of the pragmatic school. He does not push this category to the consequences which contradict the system of bourgeois thought in which it is firmly frozen. Instead, he opposes to the knowledge which can be verified and criticized through practice other forms of knowledge which, according to him, exists along with it and unconnected to it. He fails to recognize the elevation to a philosophical absolute of mechanical natural science as the ideological reflection of bourgeois society, which was able to increase reason and thereby human power and freedom in a high degree in the technique of material production, and yet must block the ever more urgently necessary reorganization of human relation in production in accordance with its own principle. Thus it negates and destroys the same criteria of reason, power, and freedom, which in cognitive theory it recognizes in isolated eras. Nor does he relate the bourgeois reality in science, which he combats, to their own ideals and standards, and thus show both society and ideals in their one-sidedness and abstraction, and thus contribute to their supersession. Instead, like Bergson and other philosophers of this period, he goes on to proclaim his own special higher form of cognition. In the fact of the deepening contradiction between use in science and use for humanity, between use for privileged groups and for society as a whole, use for facilitating production and for easing life, the criterion for utility had become a dubious principle. Scheler does not further pursue the dialectic sketched out in his work, but rather places useful science at the very bottom in his ranking of knowledge. Turning back to earlier stages of human development, he advocates, in opposition to mastery or production knowledge, the two types of cultural knowledge and redemption knowledge, he declares himself in complete agreement with the new sub-bourgeois class in the pragmatist's interpretation of the pretentious rationalist metaphysics of the bourgeois entrepreneurs. Footnote 30, text. Attacking most sharply classic German idealism and the historical materialism which issued from it. For him, it is nonsense that the human spirit and the ideal factors could ever control the real factors according to a positive plan. What J. G. Fichte, Hegel, Age of Reason, and following them only postponed to a future point in time, Karl Marx with his doctrine of the leap into freedom have dreamt will remain a mere dream for all time. Footnote 31, text. In contrast to this freedom, in which science would in fact have an important role to play, Scheler prophesied that the world should and could expect the rise of a noble and spiritually elevated group. Page 432. If bourgeoisie and proletariat are completely uncreative of all cultural knowledge and redemptive knowledge, footnote 32, text, this will be remedied from now on by the fact that growing and advancing capitalism will gradually again be able to produce a whole class of purely cognitive people and likewise of such people who have broken with the authoritative class doctrines. With bourgeois and proletarian metaphysics, that is, with the absolute mechanistic view in philosophical pragmatism, in this elite and its hand alone rests the future development of human knowledge. But the future will have a new independent rise of the genuine philosophical and metaphysical spirit. Footnote 33, text. In connection with the passage previously cited, Epicurus defines the goal of knowledge and wisdom as the happiness and good fortune of mankind. Scheler's view in the present, heralded by him in an irreconcilable opposition to this materialistic pragmatism. In the analysis of the concept of proof in its role in open-ended dialectical thought, it is shown that the decision on particular truth depends on still uncompleted historical processes, while progress in theory and practice is conditioned by the fact that, in contrast to realistic neutrality, a definite theory corresponding to the highest available level of knowledge is adhered to and applied, this application reacts on the form of the theory and the meaning of its concepts. This is not merely a question of the correction of errors. Categories such as history, society, progress, science, and so on experience a change of function in the course of time. They are not independent essences, but aspects of the whole body of knowledge at a given time, which is developed by human beings in interaction with one another and with nature, and it's never identical with reality. This also applies to the dialectic itself. It is the sum total of the methods and laws which thought adheres to in order to copy reality as exactly as possible and to correspond as far as possible with the formal principle of real events. What are the characteristics of dialectical thought? It relativizes every man-sided but isolated definition in the consciousness of the alteration of subject and object as well as their relationship. What results in idealism from a postulated absolute takes place in materialism on the basis of developing experience. Footnote 34. Text. Instead of ranging attributes alongside one another, it seeks to show by analysis of each general characteristics in respect to the particular object that this generalization taken by itself simultaneously contradicts the object, and that in order to be properly comprehended it must be related to the contrary property and finally to the whole system of knowledge. Page 433. From this follows the principle that every insight is to be regarded as true only in connection with the whole body of theory, and hence it is so to be understood conceptually that in its formulation the connection with the structural principles and practical tendencies governing the theory is preserved. Bound up with this is the rule that while maintaining unswerving fidelity to the key ideas and goals and the historical tasks of the epoch, the style of presentation should be characterized more by as well as than either or. A basic principle is the inseparability of the regressive and progressive impulses, the preserving and decomposing the good and bad sides of particular situations in nature and human history. Instead of accepting the legitimate analysis and abstraction of professional science by turning to metaphysics and religion for an understanding of concrete reality, it tries to place the analytically achieved concepts in relation to one another and reconstruct reality through them. These and all the other characteristics of dialectical reason correspond to the form of a complicated reality, constantly changing in all its details. Such very general intellectual laws of motion, which are abstracted from previous history and form the content of dialectical logic in general, seem relatively constant and also extremely empty. But the special dialectical forms of description of a particular subject matter correspond to its characteristics and lose their validity as forms of the theory when their bases change. The critique of potential economy comprehends the present form of society. In a purely intellectual construction, the concept of value is derived from the basic general concept of the commodity. From it, Marx develops the categories of money and capital in a closed system, are the historical tendencies of this form of economy, the concentration of capital, the falling rate of profit, unemployment, and crises are placed in relation to this concept and deduced in strict succession. At least in terms of the theoretical intention, a close intellectual relationship should exist between the first and most general concept, whose abstractness is further transcendent with every theoretical step, and the unique historical event in which every thesis necessarily follows from the first postulate. The concept of free exchange of commodities according to the theoretical intention, whose success will not be examined here. Knowledge of all social processes in the economic, political, and all other cultural fields will be mediated by the initial cognition. This attempt to carry the theory through to the end in the closed form of an inherently necessary succession of ideas has an objective significance.